This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What's the future of water in San Antonio? Just as Stage 1 drought restrictions kicked in on Friday, the San Antonio Water System is working to review the city's water management plan. A draft of the 2017 plan outlines the utilities plan for saving water, and is open to the public's comments till August 15th, projecting conservation targets as far as 2070. The plan anticipates what tools and resources will be needed to serve San Antonio's growing population up till then. Goals include improving technology at facilities, monitoring infrastructure like pipelines, growing investment in water projects, and reducing reliance on the Edwards Aquifer as a water source. How can we ensure San Antonio residents have a clean, accessible, affordable water supply for generations to come? We invite you into our conversation. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. With us this afternoon, we have Robert Puente, the president and CEO of San Antonio Water System, and Karen Guz. She is the director of conservation at the San Antonio Water System SAWS. And welcome to The Source, both of y'all. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Robert Puente, tell us about this plan. You come out with this, what, every 5 years?
Our water management plan comes out every 5 years, you're correct. Depending on some circumstances that may change, we do it in a shorter period of time. For example, in 2012, we did one out of cycle. And the reason we did that is because we had just taken over Barramet, and because the 2010 census was a lot different than we had thought. So we went ahead and updated it, even though that plan was only about 3 years old.
So you've been doing this for a long time. And what have we learned from the previous plans? Have they been pretty helpful in getting us to where we are now?
Well, oftentimes it is a plan of projects to be built. The little thing quite different in this particular water management plan are projects that are being built that are currently on either under construction and or already built. Have been built that can be easily expanded. So this particular plan is, I think, a lot more definite, a lot more secure, a lot more identifiable kinds of numbers than the previous plans.
And so conservation, San Antonio is built on conservation when it comes to water. Karen, talk about what role that plays in the future.
Well, conservation has been, actually, I'm proud to say, over the years and before my time at SAWS, our biggest water supply. We have reduced our per capita by such an extensive amount over the years that had we not done those savings, at today's population numbers, we would have needed an additional over 200,000 acre feet of water, which would be enormously expensive and challenging for the community. But today, we clarify conservation in some different ways. It's not just about reducing per capita, which we do think is going to happen, but it's also about making our community resilient. Whatever the climate brings, however hot the summers get, we want to be resilient. We want to have landscapes that are going to survive and reduce that peak demand that's challenging for all water utilities. You know, that day when it's the hottest, driest day of the year and everybody wants to turn on the water. A lot of the programs that we focus on right now in the conservation department are aimed at making sure that we reduce that peak and we create businesses and home landscapes that are going to be resilient to the tough weather that we know could come.
We did ask our listeners over the weekend if they had a comment to call our voicemail line, and we did get some callers, so let's go ahead and hear them. This is a call from Jim.
This is Jim from San Antonio. The water management plan points out that we're reliant on groundwater for our drinking water supply. Yet SAWS does not have any explicit policy as regards sustainable groundwater management outside of the Edwards Aquifer. Does Mr. Puente see a need for development of such a policy? And if so, what does he imagine that policy would look like? And if not, why is it not necessary?
All right. So, Mr. Puente.
I think we do have a policy. In other words, the groundwater that of other sources that we bring into San Antonio are, first of all, state regulated and sometimes locally regulated, so that the first effort is to make sure that we abide by those state regulations, those local regulations. For example, some of the groundwater that we get from Gonzales County is subject to the local regulations of the Gonzales groundwater district. The Edwards Aquifer, where we get a majority of our water, are regulated by the Edwards Aquifer Authority. So those regulations are part of what we have to abide by and what we do abide by, making sure that there's water there for ourselves, but also for our neighbors.
The legislature can be could play a role in coming up with policies that will help protect water sources, groundwater sources, like the Edwards Aquifer Authority. We've seen some court rulings that sort of challenge how effective the authority can be in dealing with rule of capture, and which we've seen in the past, going back to the Ronnie Puchek's catfish farm, that could be an issue. So is there a legislative agenda that SAWS has maybe to try to put more teeth back into the Edwards Aquifer Authority to protect the water sources?
Well, the Edwards Aquifer Authority already has existing legislation that has worked very well for the last 25 years. In other words, when that legislation was created, essentially all of the players in this entire region, I'm talking all the way from Victoria through north of north of San Antonio, Guadalupe County, Comal County, Hays County, and all the way to the west, all the way to Uvalde County. All of this big part of Central Texas, legislation was passed where everyone has certain rules to abide by. So I think the legislature already addressed those issues of the Edwards Aquifer Authority. Now, if you're talking about case law that's coming out of the Fourth Court on whether or not it is a private property right.
Right, if it's a taking of someone's private property by limiting how much you can pump out of the ground.
That is still subject to potentially some state regulation. But I think the state is going to stick with what it has already, which is that mechanism of protecting private property, but also a mechanism of protecting the natural resource. And the case law that's coming out of the Fourth Court so far has not gone to the extent where we are concerned that that's going to be an infringement on those two protections.
Right, but you are keeping an eye on it. Do you see that having a strong Edwards Aquifer Authority, being able to manage the aquifer well, is in the best interest of SAWS?
It's not only in the best interest of SAWS, it's in the best interest of the entire community. And as a matter of fact, I think it's the model that the rest of the state should adopt. In other words, we've already decided what desired feature conditions should be. We've already allocated a certain amount that the aquifer can sustain. We've already allocated a certain amount that different either industries, cities, different entities can acquire, can get out of the aquifer. So essentially, we've done what we're supposed to do in this Central Texas region, and it's a great model for the rest of the state.
And because we have this model and we know what we can work with, then we can plan for the future.
Exactly. Unfortunately, this model was created because we had a huge federal hammer over our head. And so for the rest of the state, it's very easy for the rest of the state to just kind of let the session go by and wait for next year.
We're talking about San Antonio's water future. If you have a question or a comment, we invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. How important is conservation to you? Are you concerned about the affordability for water into the future? Where are rates going to go? Are you concerned about what's happening to the natural habitat, or making sure that we have enough water so the San Antonio's business community can remain robust and continue to grow and people continue to move to San Antonio? All these things are important to our future. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about San Antonio's future with water. The San Antonio Water System has their draft of the 2017 Water Management Plan out. We have a link to it on our website at tpr.org. And how can San Antonio, how are we going to make sure that we have a plentiful supply of affordable water for people who need it and for businesses and people who want to move here and into the future when we have all these challenges ahead of us? Give us a call if you've got a question or a comment, 210-614-8980. Let's go to Greg on the phone. He called in, Greg, and Greg, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Yes, my question is, first I'll say that I lived in Japan for 3 years, and the city of Tokyo spent a lot of money building a water collection structure underneath the city. And so when I see all these downpours just running down the drain away from the city, I wonder why we don't do something like that. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, Greg, thank you for that. That would be a form of water conservation. So Karen Guz, tell us about, you know, they're the director of conservation for the San Antonio Water System. A massive water, a rain catchment system, or people do it also individually?
Well, we do, first of all, we do have rebates, custom rebates and programs for rainwater collection. But my comment on that as a supply for San Antonio is that everywhere is different. The specific problem that we have to work on in San Antonio is our hot, dry periods when we don't get any rain. And it's been pretty dry for a while. We got a little bit of rain over the weekend, but that gives people a sense of it. The challenge we have is not really the periods when it's raining. We have a lot of supplies at that time. And our per capita naturally drops, our pumping drops a lot when it rains. The challenge is when we go 6-8 weeks with no rain, and then people want to use more water. So we're trying to balance things. A lot of what we focus on is this combination of helping people use less water and have resilient landscapes so they're not trying to water things so much. And then, of course, bringing in drought-firm supplies that we know we can depend on no matter how long that dry period goes on. So, you know, it works for Tokyo, but when San Antonio Water System has run the numbers on doing a massive stormwater collection here, we still run into that problem of it being reliable for us during an extended dry period.
So, Mr. Puente, your plan calls for a drought, being able to deal with a drought that's as long as when we saw in the 50s, but with the intensity that we saw in 2011 to 2014. So that's a tough order.
Yes, and what we wanted to do was address a lot of the concerns about climate change. What we're finding out is that a drought in this part of the country may not be as long as it was in the 1950s, but they're probably going to be more severe, but for a shorter period of time. So what we wanted to do was essentially have the worst of both, put both of them together, recognize climate change, but also recognize a historical event that has happened, put them together, and then match up what we have to do to address those concerns. So we believe this is one of the unique things about this water management plan, unlike others, where we have recognized the changing climate that we have.
So in the water management plan, there's all the big engineering problems, projects that you have here, like the Regional Carrizo Water Project and the desal plant that we have at the Saws Oaks desal operation that you have, and also Vista Ridge. So any other big projects like that that you think we're going to need?
Not under this water management plan, and probably not until the 2060s, 2070 time period. I think with Vista Ridge, with our ability to expand our desal plant when needed and the ability to acquire more water from our local aquifer, Carrizo Aquifer here, will guide us through that time period. So I think we have the tools here. It was just a matter of when to use those tools.
And what's the update on Vista Ridge? Everything going?
Vista Ridge is very actively under construction. Garney Construction Company is essentially building the pipeline from four different locations throughout that 140-mile distance, starting at each end and at two points in the middle. So it's very actively under construction. Everything shows that we're going to be online when we're supposed to in the first quarter of 2020.
So everything's moving according to plan. The Vista Ridge Water Project came up in the recent mayoral race. Some people were wondering if it was something that should have been continued, but is it still at a point where the city of San Antonio de Saws can disengage from this, or is this a fait accompli?
No, we can still disengage, but there's no reason to. And to disengage would cost millions and millions of dollars. So nothing out of the ordinary has happened. Nothing wrong has happened. Nothing to make us pull back and look at the issue again. It's still a very viable project. It's still a very necessary project. And it's still a project that is very, very beneficial for our community.
Okay, I got another caller from our voicemail. This is from Meredith.
My name is Meredith. Here's my question. How do you imagine that your puny 8-year-long drought scenario would protect San Antonio in year 10 of a deep drought when the ASR reserves have been used up to enable folks to avoid stages 3 and 4 watering restrictions. And no one has any way of knowing whether the drought will last another 10 or more years.
All right. So Robert Puente, President and CEO of the San Antonio Water System.
Well, Meredith is right. We don't know how long these droughts will take. And so if we do have a situation where we have a drought that lasts longer than normal, my obligation is to make sure that we have adequate water supplies coming into this community to address those needs. In other words, what the last thing we want is just-in-time type of project where we run up against the edge of whether or not we're going to have a health and safety concern, and then the water project comes in. True planning is planning for a worst-case scenario, but also a timely sense that these projects have to come online, not exactly the time period with which we need them, but there needs to be some overlap. So she's right in the fact that we don't know how long these droughts are going to last, and therefore we have to, SAWS has to have backup sources.
But you also have to keep in mind your bottom line, and you've got to make sure that water is affordable for everyone, that you can't build up all these extra sources to prepare for a future that we can't predict, and then also, price water out of reach for, the people who need it.
Exactly, and that's why we have individuals like Karen Guz that run our water conservation department. She had a number out there that if we had not conserved the way we were conserving, that we would need to have 200,000 acre feet of more water coming in. That's 4 Vista Ridge projects. That's 6 desalination plants. And so water conservation is actually a business model where we convince our customers to buy less of our product because it saves money. And all of the water that we don't use is water we don't have to treat. Therefore, we don't have to build wastewater treatment plants. So we're very conscious and aware that these projects cost money, and we're trying to keep the rates as low as we can. As a matter of fact, we have the lowest rates of any major city except for Dallas in Texas. So we're very proud of that. We're very proud of the fact that we price water to where if you use a nominal amount, essentially indoor use, your rates actually went down last year. They didn't go up like everybody else's. And if you have a mega lawn, if you really like a lush lawn and you want to use a lot of water, well, it's going to cost you a lot. And so we believe that we're doing everything we need to do to make sure we take care of our individuals that may have the inability to make those monthly water payments.
So where do you see the water rates going in the next 20 years?
Specifically, it's very hard to even predict where they're going to be next year, but it does look like we will need a rate increase this year and the following year. After that, it becomes very difficult to gauge, but long-term projections are that there will be a plateau within the next 5 years where there will be more of a sustainability kind of issue as opposed to big rate increases.
So a lot of communities across America are experimenting with innovative ways of billing for water. I'm sure you're aware of, because this is what you do. And so San Antonio has been noted for its innovations in trying to bill for water, but we're seeing also changes in way things people are doing it in Atlanta and Philadelphia. Some places in Atlanta, they put out a tax that would subsidize water costs for people. And in Philadelphia, they're also doing some. So do you think that San Antonio should be really looking at innovations when it comes to billing for water?
Yes, and that's what we do. We are very aware of these types of innovations. Some conversations, for example, are pricing depending on the source of the water, whether it's Edwards Water or one of the new water sources. But a lot of this is, these are conversations that we have to have with our city council, even changing the type of class. Of adding a new class requires city council involvement, city council ordinance. So it's a conversation we have to have with them, taking in all of the different ways that the water is priced, and having a community conversation to see if that's the route we want to go.
So the city council, they have a big role to play in where this is going.
I would say they have the role to play, because we need their permission if we're going to change the way we price water, the way we charge water.
And so it says people are writing about this and looking at all the utilities, and you said that you're facing a challenge because there's you have to earn enough revenue in order to pay for maintaining your infrastructure, broken pipes and keeping things going. You have to keep water affordable so that, you know, everyone can have it. You know, there's talk about is people's right to water. And also you have to deal with the contraction of being able to sell less of your product because of the need for conservation. So that's a tough thing to fit.
Exactly. And that's why, again, as Karen, and I'll ask Karen to talk about this, but it is the largest water supply source that we've had over the last 20 years. And if Karen, can you talk about some of the programs that we have that helps keep rates down and actually has customers, we pay customers to save water?
We do. And one of the things I want to mention in that regard is that we have an obligation in the conservation department to aim our programs at every kind of customer. So we have a lot of programs to help people who might use a lot of water on their lawns, on their landscapes, and help them use less. But another significant program focus for us is on our customers who are in our affordability programs. There are 23,000 customers currently getting an affordability discount from San Antonio Water System because they've been identified as needing that help. And then on top of that, we're also aiming conservation programs at them to make sure that they understand how much water are you using and is that as low as you can go, or maybe do you have leaks that you need our help with? So at all times, one of the great things about the job I have that I'm so lucky to work at is that we have the pleasure of going out and helping people figure out how to save money in a way that's going to save for the entire community, too, because as Mr. Puente said, it keeps our overall rates down if we decrease the number of new supplies we have to go get.
Do you think most people are not aware of how much water that they use? Do you think that's something that,
In San Antonio, they're a lot more aware than in other places, so I have to mention that. When there have been kind of tests of water IQ, how aware of water are people, our citizens do extraordinarily well. They know their water source. They're aware of leaks in a way that other people aren't. But we still have a long way to go. For example, most people maybe don't have an idea of if I have a family of four and I'm only using water inside, I can easily use under 5,000 gallons a month for my family. Maybe people don't have that sort of benchmark in their heads as they're looking at how much water they use in the winter. So one of the things we're constantly doing is helping people understand where are you and where's your family's water use in relationship to similar families. Are you using an amount that shows great efficiency for you, or is there a lot we can shave off that bill and save you a lot?
And by saving the water that's not the cheapest, the most valuable gallon of water that we have in San Antonio is the one that's not used.
Exactly.
All right. And so education is also a big part of the plan?
It's by making sure Karen always stays working for SAWS. That's goal number one. But yes, it's a matter of education. I'm happy to say that when SAWS was created by city ordinance, part of that ordinance requires that SAWS has an education department. And so we have individuals that go into the different schools all the way from elementary to high school, help teachers with their curriculum, give them ideas on how to teach and what to teach. And so it's a constant education of our youngsters, but also adults once they get to the stage where they're the ones paying the bill.
All right, and that's the future of San Antonio, and they need water. We're going to talk about how much water is going to be available to future generations in San Antonio when we come back from this break. We're talking with Robert Puente, the president and CEO of the San Antonio Water System, Karen Guz. She's the SAWS Director of Conservation, and you're invited into the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. We've got some phone calls lined up and some emails to read when we come back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio is a water town. People have a high water IQ. They care about our water, our aquifer, our trees. It's all connected and it adds to our quality of life in San Antonio. What is the future of water in San Antonio? The San Antonio Water System has put out its 2017 Water Management Plan, and the community is invited to give their voice, to input onto what this plan is. If you think this meets our needs, if you think it needs to be tweaked, we have a copy of it on our website at TPR.com. SAWS.org. And with us today is Robert Puente, the president and CEO of SAWS, and Karen Goose. She is their director of conservation. And let's get a caller on the air, John. And John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I'd like to ask, instead of using treated water to water our lawns or in our toilets, why not use gray water that run from after you take a shower, wash your clothes, or whatever?
Okay, John, thank you for the question. And so, Karen, gray water, and tell me, give me a more round definition of that.
Well, so gray water in our homes refers to water that is we've used it once, but it's not particularly dirty, like water that you just showered with or maybe washed your clothing with. Black water is water that we flush in the toilet. So there's an easy way to distinguish. So you might produce in your house, if you got four people in the house, you might produce a couple thousand gallons of gray water a month, including all that shower water and what you use for washing your clothes. And you can divert, the easiest of the gray water to get to divert is that from your washing machine, that you could usually, depending on where your washing machine is, you could divert that and, say, start watering your trees with it.
So you'd have to use a different kind of detergent.
Yes, but I was going to say there are a couple key caveats here. It's not as easy as it sounds, and a lot of these systems end up being put in and then not used long term for a couple reasons. One is that the water is not without challenges. You've got soap in it, you've got organic material. You put that in a tank and you don't flush that out pretty quickly, you've got a stinky mess really fast. So you do have to be careful about what products you use, and you've got to maintain something new in your house, which isn't for everybody. So when we've analyzed whether or not we should do an incentive for these, a couple things we keep in mind is what's the yield, what's the cost, and then how many people are going to want to maintain that long term. And so far, we've had other things that we could point our customers to do to help them save water that were cheaper, easier, and got them a better yield. So it's not that gray water harvesting at a home won't work or can't work. It's just that so far, we've got easier options.
But doing a citywide gray water program would be a huge infrastructure campaign, and you'd have to have a major crisis of supply. Like, you know, we had a really limited amount of water in order to make that make sense, right?
Yes, and it would be something to do at new homes, and it would add somewhat significantly to the cost of a new home to double plumb a home so that all of that gray water went to a reclaimed tank, and then you have to have something to filter it and then deliver it. So again, it's not that it can't be done. It's just that if I had a choice of a couple things to do with the builders, putting in the gray water systems would not be the top one, because there are other things that they could do first that would save us more water and then be really less maintenance for the homeowner.
But there is a program to conserve the treated water that we have, right?
Well, and then here's the other reason that it doesn't quite make sense for us, is that we already have the nation's largest recycled water system. So water that goes down to our Dos Rios recycling facility already gets treated to a high standard and then distributed through the Purple Pipe system to large users all over San Antonio. And that's been a significant reduction in our per capita over the years, is that we've got places like Toyota making cars with that. We've got Microsoft doing their data center with that. We've got golf courses on that recycled water product. So what we're showering with and using in our sinks and our laundry machines is not going to waste. It's either getting distributed through that Purple Pipe system, or the other important use of that water we forget about is actually two more, or it's going to CPS Energy for their cooling to help us have power. And then the third thing we don't want to forget about is that it gets put back into the ecosystem. So that, you know, you shouldn't feel that that gray water you're producing at your home is currently in some way going to waste when you send it on its way down to Dos Rios.
Okay, another caller, Frank. Hey, Frank, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Yes, my question revolves around the statement that was made that a family of four can easily live on less than 5,000 gallons a month. I live on under 5,000 gallons a month. My neighborhood average is double that. Yet I get no incentive to live on that a lesser amount. So my suggestion is to offer some type of incentive to two people, and make that a $5,000 limit. That if they, $5,000 gallon limit, and if they live on that lesser amount, that you give them some incentive to do so. I think you'd have more people biting into that. Thank you.
Robert Puente.
We do have a program exactly like that. It's not at the 5,000-gallon level that he's talking about, but it is a situation where if you use, I think it's the number is 3,000 plus. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure the exact number. So it's a little off from what he's talking about. So those families that use 3,000 gallons or less, they actually see their, as I mentioned earlier, their rates drop and not go up as much. And surprisingly, 3,000 gallons for even a family of five is still plenty of water. And this, we have statistics at how many showers you can take, how many clothes, laundry you can, how much laundry you can do. All of this we've already calculated, so it's not a nominal amount of water. It's really something that can be sustaining.
And it, the rates are tiered past that 3,000 gallon mark too. So the way the rate structure is designed, you're essentially being rewarded the lower you keep that water consumption per month. If you progress past 3,000 gallons, past 5,000, 7,000, 12,000, each incremental level that you go up, you're going to be paying significantly more for that next couple thousand gallons of water. So our rate structure is designed to be that incentive. You're going to have a much lower bill if you keep it low.
We have smart meters for our CPS, and we're able to be notified of how we're doing on our energy usage. Is it that interactive with our water usage? Will we be able to maybe get an email or a text message telling me that I've now went from one tier to the next?
At our next board meeting, we're going to be asking our board to appropriate a certain amount of money to do a test pilot. So we are working on that. We are actively working and meeting with CPS Energy to help us in that endeavor. In other words, where our meters are, there's no power, and you don't want electricity near water. Their meters are right there at their, so there's a power situation that we need to work with. But again, with our sister agency, we're working with them, doing a pilot study with them and a private vendor to see about smart metering, where you can actually look at your phone and say, right after I turned on my irrigation system, well, what did that cost me? And then that'll be an idea that you will have that in the future, I may want to cut back or I can afford that. And so you will know on any given day what your water bill is going to be, how much water you're using, and hopefully adjust to that.
Let's go to our voicemail again. This is Michael.
My name is Michael. Whenever you go by the big new business office at the Water Board, you'll notice there's a sign saying the people who are there to pay their bills, the customers, should use the back door. I really think that the customers, the poor people of San Antonio, should be able to go through the front door of their big, fancy, expensive building to pay their bills.
Okay, Robert Puente, are you familiar with that sign?
Well, there's not a sign that says back door. There is a sign that directs the customers that want to pay their bill to Tower 2, which is where the customer service department is. So it's not a back door. It's a building that is right next to the other door. Now, he did mention this opulent building that we may have. Well, we do have Bill Greehy to thank for that. When he was at Valero, he essentially sold that building at less than half price, 50 cents on the dollar to us. It's a huge saving. It's a building that has saved us money upon money upon money, year in and year out. So it's, although it is a nice building, it was a great buy for the water system, and we would do it again today. Any entity would do it again today under those same circumstances.
Is this over by Brackenridge Park off Mulberry?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Another caller, and let's go to Gerald. And Gerald, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much. My question is, given our engineering capabilities and the brilliant minds, and we build oil pipelines that stretch for thousands of miles across the country, why can't we have an infrastructure set up that is building pipelines from areas of the country that experience great floods and distribute that water to areas that have extreme drought?
All right, Gerald.
Thank you.
Okay, we're building a pipeline now, but yeah.
Well, you can do that. You can bring in floodwaters from the Mississippi, but it's hugely cost prohibitive to do it. In other words, you'll never get it past our board. You'll never get it past City Council. The need is not there to do that. The cost is way too much to do something like that.
But, you know, we do have in parts of Texas, East Texas, they get a lot of rain. Their reservoirs are full. And so people have noted, you know, maybe a system of water sharing. Texas is crisscrossed with all sorts of pipelines that are already in existence.
Now, the perfect thing to do would be a water wheeling to where, but the problem with that, unlike power, is it's privately owned to a big extent. Surface water that's publicly owned, there's permits on it. But an ideal situation is that you essentially trade water. Instead of actually moving the water itself, the actual molecule itself, you just trade water down the line instead of having to transport it. But that requires legislation, that requires a huge drought that will get people to act. And the legislature only acts on water issues when there's a drought and when there's a budget surplus.
Okay, we're going to be taking one more break. When we come back, we continue our conversation talking about the 2017 Water Management Plan. The community's input on this is critical. You can call in with your questions or comments, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. What is the future of water in San Antonio? San Antonio is founded on having beautiful water coming out of the ground at the Blue Hole, the source of the San Antonio River. And then when they discovered that we had this beautiful aquifer that was able to supply the area with water, and now the city continues to grow and grow. We're expecting 1 million more residents by 2040, but what are they going to be making iced tea with and taking showers with if we don't plan for the future? We're talking about that right now. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. We have Robert Puente, the president and CEO of the San Antonio Water System. Karen Goose, she is the SAW's Director of Conservation. And so let me ask you, I got an email question. Why does the new SAW's water management plan not incorporate a permanent stage one water restrictions into its conservation efforts? You know, if every drop counts, why not go into a mental discipline to keep ratepayers aware that conservation is important with permanent stage one? And so, Mr. Puente.
Well, permanent stage one drought regulations are not water conservation. They're two entirely different ways that we manage our water supply. And I'll let Karen talk about water conservation, but drought restrictions are for that because there's a drought. We do have year-round restrictions, time restrictions. Again, this is a draft document, and our new mayor, along with our new city council, are going to have a say in how it's developed. And that is one subject that particularly our mayor wants us to talk about, is once a week water restrictions.
And Karen?
Well, we do three things that we save water with that have historically worked really well for us. One of them is education that we've talked about a lot, education and outreach, getting people so they're knowledgeable about water and they understand what their options are. Another is incentives to get them to make permanent changes to their landscapes or their technology. And the third phrase I use for this is reasonable regulation. And we have a lot of things on the books in San Antonio that are reasonable regulation, the most basic of which is that we don't spray irrigate in the middle of the day at any time of year, no matter what the weather conditions are. So the fundamental question for us to discuss about drought restrictions is, what do most people out there consider a reasonable regulation when it comes to year-round? And do we need it? And so that's always an interesting community conversation. As Mr. Puente said, our new mayor and city council may have some interesting views on that for us to discuss further, but for regulations to work for water conservation, my experience is that you need to get almost everybody in the community on board with it. And if everybody gets to a point where they agree that something is a good idea and we can live with this and we think this is a great idea, then it's going to be successful. If everybody's fighting it, then you're probably not going to get the compliance that you need in order for it to work.
So, Mr. Puente, as you put together the water management plan, how important is the feedback that you're getting from the community?
Well, it's very important. And even the draft itself was developed with input from the community. We met with the Sierra Club. We met with different other organizations to get where we are today. Now we have it together. We want to put it out there for the public to look at. This Thursday, if you go to Facebook, our Facebook page, you will be able to have a live conversation with some of our officials where you can ask questions, but also put your give your input as to how this document develops. And so we're going to continue that idea of going into the neighborhoods, either established meetings or meetings that are created for this purpose only. So we encourage the community to give us their ideas as to what, and this is one of the examples of trying to get the outreach, your radio show. Give us ideas, tell us what you like and don't like about this plan.
The business community is part of the community, and what's their input?
Their input was they appreciate the bigger projects. They're very concerned about the growth, very concerned about showing to the outside businesses that we are a city that you can come into, that we have checked off that box about water supply, and that you don't need to be concerned about that anymore. You can be concerned about our tax situation, our labor situation, our educational issues, but water's taken care of.
What about our military bases?
That particular thing has been taken care of. We did some projects with the military bases where we got some funding from the state to essentially every military base now has a redundant supply. They're connected to our system to where if there's an issue, water can go directly to them. Some of them are self-sustaining except for those very severe droughts. And so we have shown them that now they have that redundant supply that they can show future potential brack closings that, again, that water supply for them also has been taken care of.
Now, we are very dependent on the Edwards Aquifer Authority, the aquifer itself, the aquifer for our water supply. Was it like we're getting 48% of our water from that now?
Higher than that right now. It's probably closer to about 60, 65%.
But you want to get down to like 36% by 2070.
Yes, progression goes down as more supplies come in and more diversity we acquire here.
Now, why do we want to pull away from the aquifer when we know that it is a great source of water? It's basically clean water. You know, what's wrong with that?
Well, we're not pulling away. The percentage goes down, but we're still using the same amount of water from the aquifer.
Okay, so the level will stay the same as the amount we pull out of the aquifer, but we're going to be needing so much more that we're going to have to add more water to our overall system.
Correct. Vista Ridge, T-Cell. Just different projects that are going to be online.
Now, the water storage system that you have, so you pump water out of the aquifer year-round and put it into the storage facility, like even today?
We're allowed a certain amount of water coming out of the Edwards, a certain permit number. If we find out towards the end of the year that we're not going to meet that through projections throughout the year, then we don't want to just leave it on the table. We go ahead and pump it and store it underground. So at different times, we are pumping water out of the Edwards and sending it into the Carrizo Aquifer where it's stored there.
Other cities are seeing record droughts. Los Angeles, Melbourne, Australia, they are going through very dry times. Are you watching them and seeing how they're dealing with this and what it could mean for our future?
Yes, one of the things we're very proud of is that anybody that has a good idea, we're going to adopt, we're going to look at, we're going to see if it's something that we can import into San Antonio. So yes, we have their eyes out on them. But what we have found out is that our, if you want to call it an emergency or disaster, essentially what occurred in the early 1990s where because of the Endangered Species Act and because of lawsuits, we really had a situation where we were going to be taken over by the federal government. And so that started water conservation. That started the recycled water system. That started the ESR system. And so we've kept on being innovative in the sense that we want to bring these sources and really look at them, maximize their use, and go on to something that's just as novel, just as trend-setting, just as important for our community to where we are today, to where we feel that today and on into the future, we are very secure in our water supply.
But you do acknowledge in the plan that that climate change is a reality and that things are changing. And you have to have an adaptability, be adaptable to figure out, you know, are we going to see these really terrible droughts and are they going to be long-term?
Exactly. And that's why we droughts that were most severe in our lifetime, the 1950s drought and the drought that we just got out of in the 2011-2015 time range. One was very, very long-term, the 50s one. One was very severe. 2011 was the hottest, driest recorded time period, 12-month time period, and we put those two together and based our plan on that.
So what is the one water approach to looking at our future? You said this is a solution. You're looking at the entire water usage of a community and water resources.
Well, we're looking at how much individuals use versus how much industry uses, what kind of industries we have here. We are a big tourism city, and so how much water does the tourism industry use? So it's one concept to keep it all together to see where we are and where we need to be.
And so, Karen, what's new in this water plan? What's new for conservation? I mean, there's a lot to be brought forth.
Well, we've always got new things that are going in water conservation. I have people ask me all the time, have you gotten all the easy stuff done and is there more to do? And the answer is, well, gosh, yes, there's so much more we think we're going to drop or we wouldn't have those projections in our plan. For one thing, we're doing a lot more new kinds of engagement with people. We know that people like to engage through technology. We're experimenting with customized reports that are going out to thousands of selected customers to see if giving them peer-based comparisons to households like theirs and then educating them on how they can take actions to save, does that motivate them? In other studies, that's shown sometimes to reduce water use up to 3 to 5%. We'll see if that works for our community. We're working with technology to help manage irrigation systems better, both on very large commercial properties, and we have an experiment going with app-based controllers with homeowners right now. So there's, in addition to sort of our tried and true ways of educating people, we're also making sure that we're using the latest technology to engage.
So you think 50 years from now, people are still going to be putting in green lawns and turning on the sprinklers and doing all that, or is it time for us to put a sunset for this lush lawn obsession that many people have?
You know, the funny thing about lawns is that we can have lawns that survive and go brown. And if people could get the message that if they have enough soil under where they choose to have a limited lawn, then that lawn can survive over 30, 60 days without water once it gets established, which is amazing. We did that study with Texas A&M years ago. The challenge we have with lawns in San Antonio is that people have the urge to try to keep it green during the weather that we're having right now. So it's both a twofold message of educating them that dormant grass is going to survive and then also maybe have less of it so you're not so upset when it goes brown.
The community has the ability to comment on this plan until August 15th. You can see the draft of the SAWS 2017 Water Management Plan on our website at tpr.org. And you can email feedback to them. There's a link to that on our website as well and other opportunities to comment on that. I want to thank both our guests, Robert Puente, the president and CEO of the San Antonio Water System, Karen Guz. She is the SAWS Director of Conservation and San Antonio Future of Water. How would you sum it up in one quick word, Mr. Quint?
We are secure.
We are secure. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for tuning us in.
Has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is produced by Kim Johnson, Jan Ross Piedad, and David Martin Davies. Production assistance is provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation and the GAC Health Foundation.